Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
Hey there, Adam. I am doing great tonight. As of this episode dropping, we will be exactly 3 months away from the Batman-Catwoman wedding. It'll be 91 days before my OTP gets married in issue number 50. And I'm so excited.
And do you have, How are you doing? And do you have your dress and corsage ready? So I'm curious. I'm doing I'm doing good. This is episode 31 now that you're listening to in the audience. And I'm doing well. I'm doing very well, actually. No complaints, but my philosophy is even if you complain, nobody really listens.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
So there's that's my philosophy.
And I'll say this will be the second episode that the listeners are getting that particular week that this is coming out.
Yeah, see, we're being extra generous, even though
double dose.
Even though we're nowhere near to Christmas, but there it is. But let's not mention Christmas. Well, actually, I hope we get to Christmas sooner because by the time Christmas comes around, we'll have seen Aquaman.
I was already thinking about Christmas today, actually, Adam, because I was reading an article today about Batman Returns, and it had a bunch of clips, so I was actually thinking about Christmas today, coincidentally.
Yeah, one of my favorite Christmas movies, so there you go. But enough about
mine too. My absolute favorite Christmas movie.
Enough about Christmas, because it's way too early for that, even though I know Andy DeGenova, our guest that we had on the show from Holy Backcast, thinks that it's okay to talk about Christmas all year round. And I don't disagree with him, but this is not a Christmas podcast. So we have some news to cover this week before we get to our main topic of conversation. So let's start with some, as we always do, with some film news, shall we?
Yes, yeah, let's do it. Technically, not exactly news, but a trailer, so I guess we could sort of call that news. But before we get into that, we wanted to say something to Sam, right?
Oh, yes, Sam. Sam was supposed to join us on this episode. Sam Rizzo, my co-host on from the Simply Superman Batman days, was supposed to join us for this particular episode. But he had the pleasure of having his first nephew born, and so he is doing his duty as an uncle to go meet his new nephew. And if I remember correctly, and I hope you won't mind me saying this, the child's name is Grayson Rizzo. Does he have a future as Robin, which with a name like Grayson? Who knows?
I was thinking the exact same thing. Was he named after Dick?
Well, I don't know, because, you know, I know Sam is a big Superman and Superboy fan, so I'm surprised that one of his relatives ended up probably unknowingly knowing how these things usually happen, gave him a Batman related name. But I think it's cool. And so who knows? Maybe sidekick to Batman is in that young boy's future. But we're happy for Sam, and we wish him and his family nothing but congratulations in this joyous time for them.
Absolutely, congrats, Sam.
And we will have him on again on another future episode. So those who are disappointed that Sam is not joining us for this, don't be too disappointed, because he will be back. But on to the trailer. What trailer are we discussing today?
We are discussing the trailer, and I want to apologize to listeners. There was one week where I think basically this trailer came out several weeks ago, and we were supposed to do it one week, and then we forgot about it that week. Then another week we didn't have time to cover it, and then I think that's why we're covering it now. But anyway, so it's been out for a while. I apologize that it took us so long to get to this one, but yes. Say the movie is. Did I say what the movie was yet? Maybe I just buried the lead again.
No, you didn't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't. Okay. The movie is Lego DC Superhero Girls Super Villain High, which is the fourth animated DC Superhero Girls film, but I believe it's the second Lego one. Okay. So if I'm not mistaken, that is it here. I'm looking right now. Yes, it is the fourth in the DC Superhero Girls animated film line, but it's the second Lego one. So they did two. The first two that they did were not Lego ones, and the last one was Brain Drain, which came out last year. That was a Lego one. Then this one's a Lego one, and then the next one they're doing, which is coming out later, even later this year, is DC Superheroes Legends of Atlantis, and that one's not going to be a Lego one. But this one is a Lego one. It's called Super Villain High, and it comes out on digital on May 1st and on DVD on May 15th. So, yes.
I mean, this, to me, first of all, this franchise, this side of the franchise, seems very popular to have four films.
It's already doing better than the Batman Unlimited films were, unfortunately.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, did this not start out as a cartoon, like animated shorts or what have you?
Yes. They've really done this has pretty much expanded to every medium at this point. But it started out as these animated shorts,
okay,
that they were doing, and they're still doing them. They're still doing them. The most recent ones, I actually just watched one yesterday, that the one that just came out, and it was about it actually was very reminiscent. It was really cool, the one that just came out. It was about the DC Super Pets. So it was Crypto and Ace. Oh, and some of the other ones, Jumpa.
Ace. So the Bat Rob might come back into play here.
Oh god. but they it was very for me. I love that most recent one because it was very nostalgic for me for the Crypto the Superdog animated series.
Right.
From back in the day. Uh-huh. And so this really the most recent. They've done several webisodes now in a row that have focused on the DC Super Pets. And for me, it's like I'm watching an episode of Crypto the Superdog again.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Did you watch that animated series, Adam?
Not really.
No.
I can't say that I did.
Okay. It was good.
Hey, look, so I got nothing against it, right? But it's just not my cup of tea.
I really enjoyed it, for what it's worth.
with this, first of all, I'm going to warn the audience. It's a Lego movie, so which means by the time we get around to actually reviewing it, Jordan, given his aversion to Lego DC properties of late, I'm willing to bet it's going to be a negative review. But
I will say I like the previous one, the Brain Drain, which was also a Lego DC Super Girls movie. I like that better than I've liked any of the regular Lego DC movies or the Lego Batman movie. And I also, this one also, and we'll get into it once we start talking about the trailer, this one has something that has me more excited about it than I've ever been I've ever been for any Lego movie.
Well,
so,
well, start talking about the trailer. Like, go ahead, tell us.
I just wanted to give a little bit more background on the DC Superhero Girls line, though, because you were asking about that. They started out with the animated shorts, but they are going to be doing, like, a full animated series on Cartoon Network soon.
Okay, good. Here's my only real exposure to the show.
Okay.
I have a friend of mine whose daughter loves the animated shorts and these movies.
Uh-huh.
A friend of mine, this friend of mine's daughter also has a bunch of the action figures.
Okay.
So that's my exposure to this whole. I mean, I've heard of it, but you know.
You haven't watched any of the webisodes or anything?
I mean, I remember catching an episode or two, but it's not like I'm I'm fluent in it or anything like that, or I'm current on it.
But okay,
I'm aware of its existence. I've seen one or two. But my a friend of mine's daughter is the one that's really sort of gung ho on this whole thing. So,
well, that's, I mean, that's who it's targeted to.
Right,
so.
Right. And at the end of the day, I'm glad that they have this kind of this piece of entertainment for them. Because, you know, I've said it 1,000 times on the show. Well, maybe not 1,000 because we've only done 31 episodes. But, what you know, I like the fact that every type of fandom has something, or every age or a fan has something to stoke their fandom and get them excited about DC, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
What I'll say about the trailer.
So I was just gonna say, so they believe it or not, it's already been almost 3 years since they launched this line,
right?
When they started doing the webisodes, but they, like I said, they've got the TV series coming in spring. In this spring, it's supposed to premiere on Cartoon Network, and then also, Cartoon Network has already done a TV special on Cartoon Network. They did, okay. Which premiered even before they had started doing the direct-to-video movie. So there was already a Cartoon Network special, and then like a one-hour special, and then they started doing the movies, both the regular ones and the Lego ones. Mm-hmm. And they've also done comics and graphic novels and prose novels too, I think. So all I was trying to say was they really expanded this. Like, yeah. this line has grown a lot in the almost three years that they've been doing it.
Right, right. Yeah. No, it's a pretty big thing. I gotta say it's proving the test of time and popularity. So yeah.
I said though, I only wish Batman Unlimited could have had the same success, because I really like those.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Batman has a whole other history in animation that you know, anytime something new is put out there, it's scrutinized under the lens of, okay, well, how does it compare to the animated series? I mean, as fans, it's kind of, I think it's unfair that we do that.
Yeah.
Much like how every Superman incarnation is compared to Chris Reeve.
Well, for me, the thing that made me a diehard Batman fan, as I always talk about, is the animated series The Batman.
Right, yeah.
And that got so much backlash simply because it had the unenviable task of having to...
Yeah, it was coming right after.
Yeah, after Batman, the animated series, so, and the new Batman Adventures and Batman Beyond, but all part of the DCAU, and it was the first animated Batman series.
It was the first, separate entity kind of thing, yeah.
So...
So
I know how that is.
Well, the interesting thing for me that I take away from the trailer, I mean, the idea of basically the general idea is that there's a school for supervillains. Is that a high school for?
Sort of. Okay. Basically, the idea I think is that there's a high school that is not for supervillains so much as they're manipulating some of the DC superhero girls, some of the ones at Superhero High, into doing their bidding, and they don't realize that they're doing criminal activities, but they are.
Okay, all right.
But it's interesting because I think it's meta in a way, because one of the criticisms that I've seen DC superhero girls get, which I disagree with, but it's a criticism that I've heard it get, is that people don't like that a lot of characters who are traditionally portrayed as villains, like Harley Quinn, like Poison Ivy, like I'm trying to think. Killer Frost,
sure,
are portrayed as heroes on this show, and I mean, a lot of the ones I just named are often portrayed as anti-heroes, really, in the comics. But Killer Frost now is part of the JLA in the comics, and on TV on the Flash, she's part of Team Flash. But people have criticized these supergirls for doing that, and if you notice, a lot of the characters that are doing bidding for this school are those characters that have that history of being villains in the comics. So I think that it was sort of the DC Supergirls meta way of sort of appeasing some of the people that have complained about that, being like, okay, you want to see these characters do some villainous stuff, we'll show you that. And obviously the exception would be Catwoman. She is part of this group of heroes that are doing this stuff for super villain high, I suppose, that are doing these crimes. But so I for me, I don't know how I feel about that, because if that was the intention, then I don't know how I feel about that. But that is the thing I'm most excited about this trailer, is that Catwoman, she has been part of DC Superhero Girls for a while. She's been in the webisode. She's had some webisodes like very much centered around her. But she in all of the previous DC Superhero Girls films, the most she's ever appeared in is a cameo, if that. I can't even remember if she's even appeared in a cameo in any of the ones. But this is the first time she's going to get a big role in one of these movies. And I love it. I love that they are portraying her as a hero, of course. That's one of the things I love that they have been doing on DC Superhero Girls, because, you know, I always say that she's a hero. But it doesn't bother me. What doesn't bother me about it is that she's, even though she's doing these crimes, she's doing it unknowingly. She doesn't realize that she's being manipulated here. So I guess that's good. I guess what I was saying I didn't like was that if their intention was to have all the girls that are working for Super Villain High be the ones that are traditionally portrayed as villains in the comics, I don't like that Catwoman would be lumped in with that group. But it doesn't really matter to me that much, because she's doing it unknowingly here. So regardless of what the outer story reason for that was, it's fine what they're doing in story. And I just cannot wait. Like, that's the thing that, like I said, I've liked the Lego DC Supergirls movies better than I like the regular Lego DC movies, but I haven't loved them. Like, I've just sort of been meh on them previously, but this really has me more excited for one of these than I've ever been before. I mean, it's still probably not going to be exactly my cup of tea, but to see one that Catwoman's really going to get the spotlight in, I am very excited about that.
And I'll just say about the whole backlash towards them having villains on the superhero girls team. It's like, but you gotta look who this is geared. Well, like, look at the age range it's geared to, right? And then, of course, they're gonna do what they're doing. So, you know, I don't think it's anything to get bent out of shape for. It's supposed to empower little girls. And the last thing you want to do is show them running around. I mean, what would Harley Quinn do as a villain on this show? I mean, you'd have to really strip down the character to where she's not recognizable. If you had her doing her villainous things that she's done in previous animations and in comics. So I mean, they're adjusting for the age range, and I think that's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me, but my defense sort of, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but my counterpoint to that would be that, I mean, they do have villains on DC Superhero Girls, so, I mean, certain characters are kept as villains, so.
Right. I just think certain one of the female villains, like, you'd have to really, like, to show what they do. You know, some of their villainous ways from the comics and, you know, their history, you'd have to really, so I mean, then it wouldn't be appealing to the age demographic that they want to reach. So
sure. I mean, I'm just saying that, like, Granny Goodness is on DC Supergirls, and right, they were able to find a way to not have her be torturing people. Right, and
but here's the difference. To a 6-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 4-year-old or a 3-year-old, whatever the age range is for the show,
yeah,
specific range, they know who Catwoman and Harley Quinn are by just name and visual recognition. They have no idea who the hell Granny Goodness is.
Okay, that's a good point.
So it's different, and so I don't fault them for going down this route at all.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've never had an issue with it personally.
I will say this: either, even though it's a Lego movie, the animation style does look different from, the Flash that we just
reviewed. Yeah, they don't. I mean, it's the animation style that's been consistent with these Lego DC Supergirls movies. It was in Brain Drain 2, and they've actually done some webisodes that are Lego webisodes.
Yeah.
But they don't look like traditional Legos. Right. You're right. They look different.
That's what I noticed.
Yeah.
And Tara Strong is, correct me if I'm wrong, did I hear Tara Strong is the voice of Harley?
Yes, you did.
Man, I got her voice just on repeat in my ear whenever I think of Harley. So I caught
it's
that
awesome
right
because
away.
You're gonna get to hear her in just a few days, actually, from when we're recording this in Suicide Squad Hell to Pay.
Yes,
and
I'm very excited about that.
You're gonna get to hear her again in about another month in this.
Well, like I said, when I sleep and dream at night, I visualize Margot Robbie as Harley, and I hear Tara Strong's voice coming out of Margot Robbie's mouth. So I shouldn't have maybe verbalized that, but it is what it is. And there is an inside sneak peek into my dreams, folks. And we're just going to leave that there. But look, at the end of the day, I'm really happy that young girls have this. I think it's a good entryway into the DC universe for the young ones, and it's all good. Whatever makes them happy and whatever brings them into this world that we love so much is I'm all for that.
Sure. And I talking about a couple of points in the trailer that I really liked. Supergirl, I find the way they portray her on DC Superhero Girls just cracks me up a lot of times. Like what was the line in the trailer? It was like something smells fishy, and then they turn around and Supergirl's got the sandwich that smells.
Yeah.
That was really funny.
Yeah.
I like that closing shot of the trailer that really stood out to me was Jessica Cruz had like a plane.
Oh yeah,
construct.
Jessica Cruz. That's right. Jessica Cruz is in this.
Yes. And they actually just did an arc with her in the webisodes where we actually see her because they have Hal Jordan in these too, and Hal Jordan basically he graduates as a Green Lantern or something basically, and so then Jessica Cruz becomes the next Green Lantern. So it's not the same way that happens in the comics where a Green Lantern dies and their ring flies.
No, but it's cool that she's featured. I think.
But yes.
Because
yeah.
She's a relatively new character, and I think it's cool that they're bringing her in.
So they just did. They really do actually pay pretty close attention to the continuity between the webisodes and the movies and everything, because yeah, she just had an arc where we saw her become a Green Lantern in the webisodes, and now we're seeing her in this movie here. So
yeah,
that's cool. And I don't know if I had any other real point. It's actually a pretty short trailer. It's only like a minute long. So
it's more like a teaser. It's what a teaser for a normal movie would look like. Or, you know.
Yes. One thing I wanted to point out in the trailer, did the music in the trailer, did that remind you of not the Batman 66 theme, but the music, like sort of the other motif from the Batman 66 movie? Did you catch that?
Now that you mentioned it, I think there was a little bit of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know the song? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's like it plays when like Batman and Robin are in the Batboat.
Yeah. Okay. I can see some similarities. Yeah.
Okay. So that stood out to me too.
That's a nice call, Jordan.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know if that was intentional, but it stuck out to me.
Well, you picked it up, so that's interesting.
Yeah. Me being someone who doesn't really care for Batman.
Because you're, you know, bizarro and you don't like fun things. It's fun. It's nice that you picked that up. It's good.
Thank you. And it's going to be directed by Elsa Garagarza and the movie's written by Jeremy Adams, by the way.
Okay.
So I should mention that. So, and he wrote, I think he wrote Brain Drain too, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
So consistency there with the creative team.
Yes, indeed. And I remember in Brain Drain, he threw in a lot of cool DC Easter eggs, I remember. I don't know if that was the director or the writer, but I remember being impressed with Brain Drain, with how many
cool
Easter eggs were in that movie. So I guess if they were his doing, then with him writing this movie, again, with him writing this one too, I might expect that as well. That could be cool.
Awesome stuff.
Yes, indeed. So. So I guess I think that's all my thoughts on the trailer that I can remember anyway. Did you have anything else to say about the trailer?
No, I pretty much said what I wanted to say.
Cool.
Looking forward to spending you know, a couple hours with my niece watching it. That's what you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be fun. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can move into our news now. We got some film news. So
yeah,
I'll let you take the lead on the film news this episode.
Right. So as we know, Justice League has been on Blu-ray and DVD since March 13th, I believe. Correct? Is that?
Yeah, well, yes, it was March 13th on
yeah, I'm talking physical media. Yes.
February 13th.
Right, digital,
digital, yes.
And we now have basically the information that in its first, I guess, Variety is counting the first week of release. And they say that Justice League blasted to the top of the Blu-ray home media sales charts. So it's at number one, and it beat out previous champ Thor the Dark World. Beat Thor the Dark World, because that movie was shit. Thor Ragnarok, that was the previous number one holder. And then, you know, Mario from Revenge of the Fans, Mario Robles, points out that this is in his story covering the fact that Justice League was number one. He said that this is great news because Justice League was on the cusp of being of turning a bit of a profit, and that this kind of DVD performance will you know lead to that. And also that the fact sales are very on this one are very important to Warner Brothers, because he said that if sales figures were positive, which now they are after the first week, it would give the new regime at Warner Brothers, so Walter Hamada, Chantel Nong, I think that's what we decided that her name was, how it was pronounced.
Yes.
And you know, so the, and the new regime would be confident and more gung-ho and bullish about putting more DC films into, you know, DC shared universe films into production. Whereas, as opposed to that, if sales figures were, you know, weak or lackluster, then they would have taken a more subdued muted approach to how they would roll out future DC live action films. So that's all positive news.
And I'll say, that's sort of something that I have. First of all, I think Justice League is a significantly better movie than Thor Ragnarok, so I'm very happy to hear that. I mean, not that it affects me in any way, but from a personal standpoint of thinking that it's a significantly better movie, it's kind of nice for me to hear that it has beaten out Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
I'm not trying to start any DC versus Marvel stuff here, saying those individual movies, I think Justice League was significantly better.
Sure.
But I also want to say this was something that I had sort of predicted I thought might happen, that it would do really well on home media. And the reason for that is, obviously, we know that I don't know if I would say obviously. I think that here's what I think. I think that Batman v Superman's negative reception was a huge factor in why Justice League did so poorly at the box office.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. And
okay. However, I think that a lot of people who did, even if the people that didn't like BVS but said, okay, you know what, I'm going to go see Justice League anyway, even though I didn't like BVS, I think those people a lot of them came away, and this is not my personal opinion. Personally, I like Justice League. Personally, I like Batman v Superman more than Justice League. But I'm just saying, I think a lot of those people came away from Justice League saying that they liked it more than BVS. And so I think that those people may have went and told all their friends who didn't see Justice League in theaters. They might have told their friends, "Hey, Justice League is you. I know you really didn't like BVS and didn't want to go see Justice League in theaters, but you should check it out on a home video because I thought it was a lot better than BVS." And so I'm hoping that those people are then buying it on home video.
Here's what I'll say. You're bang on about BVS affecting the reception of Justice League. Because mm-hmm. even though all the DC films at this point have done well on Blu-ray and DVD,
mm-hmm.
BVS is the lowest grossing on the home media. That to me tells me, confirms my theory that BVS turned a lot of film goers off, who then said, well, it's quote-unquote, even though Joss Whedon stepped in, it's quote-unquote directed by the same guy. The visual stylings from the trailers look like BVS. And the villain is, again, another you know, CGI dude with horns and all that jazz. Like, you know, this further corroborates my theory and the long-standing theory that BVS did have an effect. Now, dovetailing off your point, I graded numbers wise BVS higher than I did Justice League, mainly because I think the thematically was a deeper film.
Much deeper.
Yeah.
Justice League is not a Justice League. Listen, I enjoy the hell out of Justice League, yeah. But it is not a deep film at all.
No. So thematically, it's deeper. When you watch the extended cut, you get a sense of Lex Luthor's machinations and the whole behind the scenes, you know, pulling the strings and all that, which to me is vintage Luthor, and I like that. And then also, because I'm a sucker for The Dark Knight Returns and the fact that BVS pulls visual cues right from the comic book, I skewed a little higher. But if I'm saying from a pure 2 hours of enjoyment and fanboy fun, I'll rewatch Justice League more times. That's just my thoughts on it.
Are you saying that you think that you're gonna rewatch Justice League for the rest of your life more times than you wind up rewatching BVS?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
And it boils down to the fact that first of all, it's shorter. And second of all, I watched it. I haven't watched the special features yet, but I watched the film again.
Uh-huh.
And as I watched it again, you know, I sort of closed my eyes when the Hugo Weaving CGI mouth came on. But aside from that, as I'm watching it, I just get the vibe of Justice League the animated series. And that makes me smile. So there's that. But I'm glad it's doing well on Blu-ray, and I'm glad that this is going to give the head honchos at DC Films there the you know more ammunition to keep forging ahead with the shared universe and to not be afraid and. That's a positive. Yeah, I'm happy about that. There's another little shout out I'd like to give to Mario because let me get the number right. On episode, let me double check the number here because I want to credit the right episode. On episode 54 of the El Fanboy podcast, Mario dropped a little a tidbit of news about a upcoming Batman animated film in the animated movie universe line that has yet to be announced, but according to his sources, is in some stage of development over at Warner Bros. Animation. You know what? You want to guess, or should I just rip the bandaid off and tell you the title?
Tell me what it is. I'm waiting here on the edge of my seat because I don't know this.
Are you sitting down?
I'm sitting down.
Batman Hush.
Holy shit! Yes. Oh my goodness. Dude.
So there it is. I urge you to go listen to Mario's podcast for his reveal of that bit of news. And he also talks about this.
Did he say whether it's going to be a two-part? Does he have any more details?
He doesn't know. Okay. Or if he knows, he didn't say. So.
You know what the first thing I thought of, Adam, was?
What?
Seeing the Bat-Cat rooftop kiss in animation.
Yeah, see, I knew you were going to think of that. And see how nice I am. I dropped that knowing that you'd go crazy and start ranting about that stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Dude. And it's going to be in the DCU AOM line?
As far as I know, that's the plan.
And are they going to – do we know whether they're going to try and adapt it to be in continuity with the New 52-inspired shared universe?
I have no idea. You should go listen to the El Fanboy number 54 podcast.
I was wondering whether he said it on there.
I tell you that, it's going to, you're not going to go listen. So I encourage you to go listen to find out.
For our listeners, you're giving him credit. Can you just tell me?
I'll tell you off air. How about that? For the rest of you, go listen to the podcast, episode 54 of the El Fanboy podcast. Mario also discusses this nonsense of a narrative saying that there is a negative buzz around Aquaman, which fans are taking out of. I don't even want to get into it because it's so. The quote that people are freaking out about is it's so a non-issue that I'm not even going to mention it, but go listen to the El Fanboy episode 54 of that podcast for that. And
so you're saying that he does confirm, you're not going to tell me whether it is or isn't, but you're saying he does confirm whether it's in the in continuity or out of continuity?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying our listeners, I'll tell you off air. Show some discretion. Show some patience.
You know I don't have
just anything. Visualize that Batman and Catwoman kissing and then leave that there.
That's true. Okay, I am visualizing that and it's making me very, very happy.
We don't want to know. Go take a cold shower, but let's move on.
No. Adam, that's not what I meant.
Well, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Let's move on.
Oh my goodness, dude. Because this is something, dude, you have no idea how long I've been waiting for Hush in animation. Like,
I've been waiting longer because I'm older than you and I probably read it as soon as it came out.
That's probably true, actually. Here's what I say. Do you remember when they were developing a Hush movie actually within the continuity of The Batman as a sequel to The Batman versus Dracula?
I heard about that, yes.
Yes, yes. There's even some concept art. I think Legion of Gotham has it, if anybody wants to see that concept art. It's actually been a movie that's sort of been in the works for a while now. Ultimately, I'm not going to lie, just because you know how much I love the Batman, I think my ultimate preferred thing would be for them to have set it in that continuity, because I love it so much. And I sort of still was always holding out hope that maybe they'd set it in that continuity and do like a 15th anniversary for the Batman. And because we just saw them revisit Brave and the Bold.
And who knows? Maybe they might. Because there's no release date on this thing yet.
So that means that Mario didn't come. You just confirmed for me that Mario didn't confirm what continuity it was in.
Well, you can extrapolate whatever you want. I'm just saying there's no release date on this thing. And you never know. The point is an animated Hush adaptation is on the way.
Yes. Oh, dude. I am so excited. I I guess we can speculate a little bit. I guess I'll do some speculation on here right now. We know that the Death and Return of Superman two-parter is going to be in continuity.
Sure.
And we know that the second one is coming out in early 2019. So that's going to be the first of the three, presumably, DCU AOM films in 2019.
Sure.
If they stick to their schedule, then they usually do the first two, they do three films a year. The first two are in continuity, the third one's out of continuity. So next year, presumably, Return of Superman in continuity. Then my guess is that this one will, Hush will be the next because why? Because we haven't heard about anything else. So that's going to be the next one, presumably. Let's say that's the spring release, probably in continuity. So I'm guessing it might be in continuity. And then the third one next year will be out of continuity. That's my guess.
I can definitely see that. My guess would be also that they'd put it in continuity.
They put it in continuity. Okay. Dude, you just confirmed for me that Mario didn't say one way or another.
Look, I just want people to go listen to his podcast. That's all.
Well, that's great. That's great. Everybody should go listen to his podcast. But what I'm saying is that it doesn't. You can still say here whether he said that or not.
Well, you just beat around the bush. You've done it. So let's move on.
Okay. Well, it did not have to take. We could have told you in 30 seconds.
Look at all the anticipation we just built up over there for that.
I speculated for 5 minutes when you already knew the answer.
Yeah, but it makes for a great podcast discussion. So who cares?
That's fine. If it is in continuity, man, then that means that we're gonna get Catwoman finally cast in this new 52 shared universe. She hasn't shown up yet. My hope is that they bring back Jennifer Carpenter. And they have her do it for the incontinuity.
Yeah, she was great.
She was amazing. Already my favorite Catwoman voice actress ever. She is so, so good in Gotham by Gaslight. So if they bring her back, that'll be great. I like Jason Omar's Batman quite a bit. I would be excited to hear the two of them play off each other. Oh, my goodness. Dude, you just blew my mind on air. Listeners, you just heard me get my mind blown on air. That's crazy.
Well, you can thank Mario as well, because if he hadn't...
Yes. Thank you, Mario.
There you go.
We appreciate it.
All right, what's next?
Okay, next up is... I guess we'll move on to TV news.
Yeah.
And we also have some comics news, Adam, that I forgot to mention before we started, but I have it pulled up now. Oh. So we have a little bit of comics news. So you might get surprised on this. I don't know. You might have seen this news already, but you might get surprised on this.
Oh, no. We do have some comics news to talk about. My mistake. I forgot. Yeah. We might not be thinking about the same thing, but we'll...
We might not. Well, then maybe we have two comics news things to discuss.
All right. Let's go. Let's do TV first.
Well, we got TV first. Yes. Sorry. So we just got news that if Legends of Tomorrow returns for season 4, crossing my fingers, then Matt Ryan is going to be a series regular as Constantine.
Right.
Now, obviously, we know he's shown up a few times this season. He, as of our recording this, he was in the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow.
Well, it won't be the most recent. Yeah.
As of our recording.
By the time it's out.
But as we're recording this, he was in the most recent.
Sure.
So, of course, he's had a big presence on Legends this season, but next season he will be a series regular should the show get renewed. I guess I'll leave it with that. I'll let you give your thoughts and I'll give my thoughts. So,
I think it's great news. First of all, I think this idea of if it's going to be renewed is a joke. Of course it's going to be renewed. It's the CW. And it's the CW, first of all. And they've expanded their programming days to Sunday. Of course it's going to be renewed.
I sure hope you're right, dude.
Of course I'm right. I'm always right.
You're right that the CW has renewed a lot of. I mean, you don't need to have great ratings.
They don't cancel anything unless it's.
But I did hear that the two most recent episodes of Legends, or maybe this was the two most recent before the most recent one with Constantine, but I had heard that like two episodes in a row had been their lowest rated episodes of the whole show.
But that happens all the time on the CW. It's just.
And also, one of my favorite shows on the CW did get canceled after one season. So, They've been CW has 90% of the time renewed my shows, but there's one that I'm never gonna quite get over that they didn't renew after one season. But yeah. Anyway, I'm very hopeful that it gets renewed, and I really hope you're right. I'm just playing devil's advocate for a second, but I hope you're right.
I love it, and I love the fact that Matt Ryan has taken a show that was canceled after one season, and you know the characters lived on, and he's continued to play it.
Yes, when Constantine got canceled, I could have never imagined that we'd get this much more of Matt Ryan in the role.
Yeah.
I mean, Justice League Dark animated movie, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, and which actually it premieres tomorrow as of our recording this, is his animated series on the CW Seed.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. So anyway, we've seen way... I could have never imagined that we'd see this much of him even after his show's canceled, but it's awesome.
He's great in the role, so...
Yeah, I mean, he's like Constantine jumped off the comic book page, literally. Like,
He would fit the tone of Legends, the oddball, crazy stuff they do on there. So
yeah. Question for you, Adam. Do you think that this means that they'll continue doing magic stuff next season? And that's why they're bringing in, somebody, a petty dabbler in the dark arts, if you will.
I'm gonna say yeah.
Next season, yeah. That's what I was wondering. I mean, it feels like Legends is sort of. I don't know if they'll do as much magic next season as during this season, but I at least think that there'll be a little bit of magic next season because it feels like that's why they would need somebody with magical abilities on the Wave Rider.
Sure. Yeah.
And I mean, we've seen them sort of. I don't know if you've noticed this, Adam, but this is something I've sort of started to pick up on. They've sort of started addressing some of the issues that they've had with in terms of like they've realized, oh, we've had trouble against this particular threat, so then we'll have somebody with that threat join the Wave Rider. So like, for example, last season. The Legends struggled to defeat Reverse Flash. Then, who do they bring on this season? They bring a Speedster. They bring Wally. Then, this season, they're struggling with magic. Who are they going to bring on next season? They'll bring on Constantine.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Oh, another question. This is something I was starting to speculate about. I want them to... There's two places now that they could do this. Either on the animated series, or they could do it here on Legends of Tomorrow. I want them to continue. I want to, the big cliffhanger from the end of the Constantine live action series. I want to see that wrapped up. I want to see the Spectre. Basically those two things. But they've already sort of touched on, like in the most recent episode of Legends, they talked about Astra. So they're clearly carrying over some plot lines.
Sure.
From his show. So, but I want to see those two get resolved. I would love to see, and I would love to see some of the other characters from his show too. Like, I can't remember the girl's name, but I know the actress's name, Angelica Salaya. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but her, I want to see her again. I want to see Chaz again. I want to see, what's the other guy? The guy who worked at the university, what was his name?
Oh yeah, I forgot.
Anyway, he was in the Justly Dark movie, and he died, but I think the Justly Dark movie is technically set in a different continuity than that's not Arrowverse. The Justly Dark movie, in the Justly Dark movie, Matt Ryan was playing a different version of Constantine than he's playing here. So that doesn't matter. But I would like to see him again. I would like to see all those characters again. So if they could bring them onto either the animated series or Legend of Tomorrow and at least like a guest spot just so we could get some of those storylines wrapped up. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because, of course, there was a huge cliffhanger at the end of Constantine.
There was.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that NBC is NBC.
Yeah. Yeah, so, they burned me twice now. They burned me with Constantine, and then they burned me with Powerless.
Yeah.
So, but I'm so happy that Matt Ryan is still – we're still getting to see more of Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Indeed it is. All right, comic news.
Okay, should I say mine first, and you'll see if it's the same one you were thinking of?
Sure, yeah, sure.
Okay, so we got, along with Scott Snyder writing Just League starting in June, we now know what artists are going to be working with him, and those are Jim Chung and Jorge Jimenez. And they are going to be joining Scott Snyder on the main Just League title. Yeah, was that the same news you had?
No, but oh, okay. It's cool. I totally slipped my mind. But
okay. And I guess we didn't talk about this before. This is sort of old news a little bit, but the new Just League roster.
Oh yeah,
that they're going to be working with.
Yeah, mention the roster and then we'll talk.
Okay, it's very similar to the Justice League animated series original founding member roster, but a little bit different. Yeah. You've got Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Martian Manhunter, Green Lantern John Stewart, and Hawkgirl. Those are the members from the Justice League founding members of the animated series. Then, though, the differences are you've got Cyborg, Aquaman, and Barry Allen Flash roster. So I guess I'll just say real quick, for me, this is very exciting. I love the roster on the Just League animated series. I'm excited to see Martian Manhunter back. Obviously, he showed up in both Metal and in the Just League title already, or at least he's been mentioned in Just League title. I can't remember if he's actually shown up. I know that in like one of those recent issues, Jessica and Simon went and helped him on a mission or something like that real quick. I don't know. But I remember him showing up. He's shown up recently. He's finally made his return sort of in the DC universe. So he'll be on the team now, though, which is very cool. In terms of the Green Lanterns that are on the team right now, Simon, I'm pretty much indifferent to Simon. And Jessica, I was indifferent to, but now I really don't like her because there was an awful thing that happened that Christopher Priest is doing with her recently. No, it's not funny. It's not funny. It's awful.
I think it is.
It's awful. Christopher Priest is completely disregarding the fact that, and not only is he disregarding the fact that Batman is engaged right now in the comics, he's not only disregarding it, but he's spitting right in the face of it, and it frustrates me to no end. So anyway, Jessica Cruz, I have very much soured on, and now I don't like her at all. So,
but that's not her fault. It's the writer's fault.
Well, anything any character does is the writer's fault. I mean, you could say that anything any character does, by that logic, is not their fault because it's the writer writing them. But so anyway, I'm happy that I like John Stewart. I love John Stewart, so I'm much happier to see him on the team than Simon. It was Simon I was fine with. Jessica, I don't like. So, but I like John Stewart even more than Simon too. So I'm happy to see him on the team. And I'm happy to see this revamped roster. I wasn't as excited as a lot of people when Scott Snyder got announced that he was going to be on the book. I have been sort of he's been hit or miss for me in the past for the most part. He's been very hit or miss for me actually. And his one real Just League story that would presumably give us a taste of what he might bring to a Just League book, which is DC Metal, that's been an example of a miss of one of his for me. That's been a big miss, in my opinion. So I was a little bit nervous about this, but then again, it pretty much, I can't imagine it being worse than what Christopher Priest is doing right now and what Brian Hitch was doing earlier in Rebirth. I think I liked it a little bit more than most people, but I still wasn't a big fan of it other than the Last Dark Legacy, which was really, really good. But I'm excited. This new roster has gotten me pretty excited. And I'm excited to see what these new artists bring to the book as well. And I found out Jorge Jimenez I didn't actually know this before, but he's actually from Granada, Spain, and the reason I bring that up is because I actually studied in high school for 6 weeks in Granada, Spain. So, yeah. So I thought it was very cool to find. I just found out that he's from Granada, Spain, and so I was like, oh, that's really cool.
I just found out Jordan studied, and I think that's fascinating. but no, I'm kidding. here's what I'll say. Look, I think on the whole, Christopher Priest's run on everything, including Deathstroke, is highly overrated. I think his plotting of issues is confusing. But having said that,
I agree. By the way,
anything that annoys you, it makes me laugh. So good job, Christopher Priest.
Oh my goodness! You see, I was just agreeing. I agreed with the first thing you said, and then you have to go do that.
So So hold on to that as I before I move on to the Scott Snyder news. As I say, hashtag Backcruise.
Shut up.
But
Bat Cat Forever from the first kiss to the last. Who is wearing an engagement ring right now?
Can I tell you who's wearing one? Tom King, because he's the only real person in that relationship.
Oh my.
I'm a big fan of Scott Snyder. I've loved everything he's done except for that Bunny Ears Batman with Jim Gordon. I'm excited for him to come on Justice League. In terms of the artists, they're both really good, and the preview art that I've seen looks great. In terms of the roster, I love it because I grew up with when my first real exposure to the Justice League was the Justice League animated series. Remember, I stepped away from comics during my high school years. So when I came back, Grant Morrison was writing the book, and Martian Manhunter was on it. Green Lantern was there, but it wasn't John Stewart. It was Kyle Rayner. But I went back and read his run after I started watching Justice League, the animated series.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, dun. Please don't make anybody else's ears bleed. No. So I'm very partial and fond of this roster. So I'm happy, and I'm glad that, you know, Martian Manhunter's back, John Stewart, because, you know, I think a lot of people are in this boat that they know the Justice League from the, you know, a lot of, not, I mean, there are fans of the Super Friends and all that stuff that grew up with something before, but there's a large fan base that only knows that animated roster. So to have the predominant, you know, be similar, and then obviously throwing in Aquaman
Cyborg.
Yeah, that's it.
And Barry Allen Flash instead.
Yeah,
of
yeah, but I mean people. I think it's a great thing, a great team, and
to be fair, Wally in the DCAU was sort of an amalgamation of Barry and Wally.
And the cool thing too is that I like that Hawk Girl is in the mix, because the other bit of comic news that we didn't cover is that Hawkman is getting a new title in June. Written by Robert Venditti, who's currently writing Green Lantern Corps, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, which is the better Green Lantern book in my opinion. And he's also writing...
It's the one that doesn't have Jessica Cruz, so that makes me happy.
Oh, you're just a hater.
I'm not I can't comment because I'm actually not reading either of those books. So
and he's also writing Damage, which is cool, which is a cool book. Damage is basically DC's Hulk, but it's better because it's DC. I just threw that shade. Deal with it.
What is it that Lego Batman says? That's right. That's right, Superman. Come at me, bro.
Come at me, bro. I don't give it. You know. No, I'm kidding. I like Marvel, but Damage is better than the way Hulk is written. But so he's writing it, and on art is Brian Hitch.
Brian Hitch, I actually dig his art quite a bit.
His art's fantastic. His art's fantastic.
I have mixed feelings about his writing. Again, I don't dislike it the way some people do, but I think it's just okay. But for the most part, other than that legacy arc, he killed it on that legacy arc.
Yeah, his arc, well, let's put it this way. Even his worst arc of Justice League was better than what Christopher Priest is doing. I can't stand this.
Yeah, I agree.
I know, you know, his Deathstroke suck. Everybody's giving it critical praise, and I'm sitting here like, I think it sucks.
I read one issue of his Deathstroke, and I didn't care for it at all. And so...
But no, so I'm excited about the creative team on Hawkman as well. So I thought I'd give that a shout out. I'll be reading that digitally when it comes out in June.
Cool. And Hawkgirl, I should mention, there's been some interesting stuff going on with her in Metal.
You gotta give credit. Gotta give credit to Scott Snyder for bringing Hawkgirl and Hawkman back into the DC universe through Metal. So whether you like or don't like what he's doing, at least he reinstated those two characters and Martian Manhunter, who should have never been gone from the get-go. But it is what it is. But they're back now, and I'm happy for both those comic book developments. The other bit of comic book news, which wasn't the Hawkman thing, that's not what I'm referring to.
Oh.
I just thought I'd throw that in.
Oh, okay. Well, then we actually get three pieces of comic book news. Actually, four if you count the artists and the roster for Justice League separate, then four pieces.
I count that as one. You're splitting hairs.
Oh, okay. Three. We still started out thinking we had zero comic book news, and then all of a sudden we have three. So that's
it's all about giving here. I don't think we mentioned this last week, and we should have, but for whatever reason, it didn't happen. But DC announced, I think it was last week or a week and a half ago, a new imprint, DC Black Label, where they're going to bring in top flight creative teams to tell stories with some of the more recognizable characters. Did you know about that?
Yes.
Okay, and basically, it ties in with the fact that Frank Miller has signed a five. Let me correct this. Read this right. A five project deal with DC, and one of them is gonna be for that DC Black Label line, which is Superman Year One, with art by John Romita Jr. He's gonna be doing a younger reader graphic novel featuring Kerry Kelly, who is the Robin of The Dark Knight Returns.
And I don't think that's in the DC Ink line, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah, but the Superman Year One is part of the
DC Black Label, right? Well, the reason I brought that up was because I don't think we've talked. I think we meant to talk about the DC Ink and DC Zoom, and then we never did.
I could have sworn we did.
Did we?
I'm pretty sure we did.
Okay.
Yeah. When Eric Holtzman came on, remember
we did
because he was talking. Yeah, because he was talking about that Batman.
We touched on it. Well, we touched on it when he brought up the Batman Nightwalker thing.
Yeah.
But
exactly,
I don't think we actually talked about it on news. As we don't, we did. I think that's the only book we talked about.
Yeah.
But I don't think we talked about the other stuff. But
yeah.
So if you want to, we could talk. We could touch on that a little bit this episode too.
Sure. And then the other one with the black the DC Black Label is the. They're doing a couple of Batman books. And the titles escaped me because I wasn't planning to talk about these particular books right at the moment. But
one of them's called this is just off the top of my head. I'm not sure that I'm right. I think one of them's called Batman Damned.
Yes, with Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo doing the art. They're, of course, the team that brought you the Joker graphic novel, which
is amazing.
You read it?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I get a side note. I got to do a poll where we ask the listeners who they think's read more comics, you or Rick Shue from Batman on Film. I'm gonna do that as a.
It's definitely there's.
Don't say definitely you because I can't. You know what? This needs a poll. I'm gonna decide this with a poll. I'm not waiting until this episode drops. I'm gonna launch that poll
I've read. You remember when I mentioned to you that I've read the entirety?
Yeah, don't spoil it. I want the audience to vote.
Well, they need the correct information. They can't just guess.
Yeah, but I'm gonna post this anyway. I'm going to post this. This poll is going to be done in advance of this episode.
Adam, that is...
Come on, it's not for prizes, it's just for fun. You're making this bigger than it has to be.
Because there's no question.
There is a question, we're going to see. But anyway... By the time this episode airs, we'll have the results.
You remember when I brought up I've read the entirety of the freaking pre-Flashpoint Blue Beetle run of all things?
Nobody cares about
Blue Beetle. Well, that's my point.
Nobody else has read that because it got canceled. But
it lasted like there's like four volumes of that. It
still got canceled.
It got canceled because of Flashpoint. It got canceled because of Flashpoint.
It got canceled. But anyway, yeah, you're right. Batman Damned, right, where he teams up with John Constantine, which should be fascinating. And then I think there's another one that's called Batman Last Night on Earth. I think it's called something along those lines. By Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. And it's meant to be the outside of continuity last Batman story ever told. So that should be fun. And there are two Wonder Woman projects that I can't remember off the top of my head, but as those get announced, and when they come out, we'll touch on those again. but I'm excited about this Black Label thing. It's basically Elseworlds with a fancy name. I'm glad that these outside of continuity stories are back.
You just think, Adam, the reason you think I haven't read that many comics is because I haven't read very many Superman comics.
Well, either way, that poll is
going up. That's the only...
Either way, that poll is going up after we hang up this phone call, and we're going to see who the audience thinks is written more comics.
My question is, what are you polling exactly? What are you...
I just want to know who the audience thinks based off listening to how many times the Batman on Film guys make fun of Rick Shue for not reading comics, and the amount of times that I make fun of you for not reading comics. What the listeners think? Who the listeners think read more comics? It's not a well-informed poll. It's just for fun.
Oh my goodness!
It's the best way to poke fun at both of you people. That's basically what it boils down to. And, you know, I appreciate you both, but it's also fun making...
Trying to steal my comic... trying to steal my comic book cred over here.
The winner gets a lifetime subscription of the issue where Batman kisses Jessica Cruz.
Then he can win. Then make sure... I'm going to vote for him so that he wins. I already have that issue. I wish I didn't have that issue.
You're gonna see a listing on eBay. Jordan, 1 cent for issue, whatever issue number one. I'll give it away for free.
We should talk about that DC Inc. and DC Zoom line real quick.
Yeah, okay. What's going on? We touched on it before, but what is it?
Yeah, so they're doing one line, which is focused on DC Inc., which is focused on young adult readers, and DC Zoom, which is focused on middle grade readers.
So you'll be reading Zoom, right? So you'll be reading the Zoom.
Probably not. But I wouldn't have any problem reading that. But the books that I'm most interested in are the DC Inc. ones, based on the subjects of them, because there's one. Okay.
Let me guess. Wait a minute. One has Catwoman in it, right?
Good guess. Yes. But you're not you've only got part of the idea here. So I'll explain. In the DC Inc. line, there's several titles that have been announced, but the two that really stand out to me. Okay, well, first there's the one that I think Eric was mentioning, which is Batman Nightwalker, which is a graphic novel adaptation of the prose novel that came out earlier this year, I think I mentioned this on our episode with Eric, it's really weird to me that they'd first write a prose novel and then decide to make a graphic novel of it, but whatever. So they're doing that, Batman Nightwalker, the graphic novel by Marie Lu, who's also the same woman who wrote the prose novel.
Sure.
So there's that. But then the one that I'm most excited about is this thing called Batman Gotham High by Melissa De La Cruz.
Okay.
It involves Bruce and Selina in high school together.
So kind of sort of like Gotham.
In a way. Yeah, except in Gotham, we never actually see them at school.
So well, Bruce is homeschooled. What the hell is he going to high
school? This will be like... He was going to school in Gotham for a while. But this will be... To me, I'm like, this is like...
It's Smallville for Batman.
It's like Smallville for Batman. Exactly. And I'm like, this is something that, like, I can't believe I never really thought of, but, like, I'm so excited. Like, seeing Bruce and Selina in high school together is something that makes me so, so excited. And it's like, Gotham sort of set the precedent for Bruce and Selina knowing each other at such a young age, and I'm loving that it's being continued over here. Like, I cannot wait. There better be some amazing Batcat moments in here, and I cannot wait. And apparently there's also going to be somebody named Jack that goes to their school, which I'm guessing is going to be a pre-Joker Joker, Jack Napier, I'm guessing.
Probably, yeah.
So, that makes sense. But what I can't believe we're going to get a Bruce and Selina in high school comic book.
Yeah, it's. I think it's a cool idea.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Smallville for Batman, I'm down with that. Yeah.
There's also one called Under the Moon, A Catwoman Tale by Lauren Miracle in the DC Inc. line, which also has me super duper excited. I don't know what the deal is with that one, but, I mean, I can't wait.
I could have told you that. I could have pegged that reaction from you.
Oh, okay. Yes, you probably could have.
But yeah, I mean, I'm excited for all this.
And then there's the DC Zoom line too, which is
mostly for kids.
Right? Yeah, well, middle grade. Yeah, I guess I don't know what that means, right. Yet, but yeah, I think kids, like middle schoolers, I guess.
Right.
So yeah, that is awesome. I'm.
Exciting, cool stuff.
And just to further fuel the fire here, I'll be reading these. Is Rick going to be reading these?
I'm going to say, well,
probably. Just throwing it out there. You started that, Adam. You started this debate. I'm gonna stand up for myself here. Damn it. Anyway.
Well, anyway. it'll be too late because people have already voted on the poll by then. But yeah, all right. Moving on. Why don't we get to the actual meat of what we're supposed to be talking about.
Yeah, tonight, let's do it.
Which is the long-awaited premiere of Krypton on Sci-Fi.
Yes.
The pilot episode.
Yes. Starring Smallville alum Sean Sipos.
But also Cameron Keefe.
Yes.
And a bunch of other people.
But Sean Sipos is a Smallville alum, so he gets to get named first because he's a Smallville alum.
Sure. So why don't you do what you always do and read the description.
Oh, okay. Yes, I guess I will have to pull that up now.
Which you probably don't have up.
I don't have it up, but I am pulling it up now.
Do you ever come prepared for these things? Is my question.
I had the pilot description up for. No, I had the. What did we review last episode? I had it up for Lego DC Superheroes The Flash in time. I had it up before we started. Well, I did.
Yeah, it's only because you refused to watch the
Well, if it was good, I would have watched it again. Or if you had gotten when it came out on digital, I would have not had to. We would have reviewed it.
Listen, I don't do things on your schedule.
Okay. Are we thinking one sentence or two sentence?
Because it's a premiere, I'm going to say two. you know what? IMDb, you suck, but go ahead, read it.
Superman's grandfather, Segel, learns Krypton is in danger of being destroyed so that his future grandson will never be born.
All right. Yeah. That's about it. Yeah, that's a good description. I'm just going to start us off by saying that I have a long history with Superman on TV. My first exposure to the character was not a movie, was not comics. It was Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman.
With Smallville alums Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher.
You cannot call Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher Smallville alums.
Yes, I can. They were on Smallville, therefore they're...
They originated the roles when it's compared to Tom Welling and Erica Durant, even though I love Erica Durant. But anyway.
Are they not technically Smallville alums? I believe they are Smallville alums.
Listen, they're forebears in the Superman television pantheon, so I refuse to call them Smallville alums.
Guess what? Guess what? But Christopher Reeve also was a Smallville alum. Margot Kidder, Smallville alum.
Yeah, well,
Mark McClure, anyway, same thing. Smallville alum.
All right, anyway, so that was my first exposure to Superman. Then, you know, I watched the movies. Then Smallville came along, and I spent another 10 years with Superman on TV. Then
10 amazing years, by the way.
Then I rewatched, this is not a Smallville review, so save all that for season 2.
Do you expect anything less from me, Adam?
No, I've lowered my expectations big time. Because I bought them on DVD when Superman Returns was coming out, the George Reeves Adventures of Superman, as a sort of a bonding experience with my mom, because that was the Superman that she grew up with as a kid watching. So it was cool to watch that with her. So I have a long relationship with Superman on TV. So you could say that I was predisposed in a way to liking Krypton, to a degree. I thought I'd like it, but I didn't know like how much was I going to like it. And just to start us off, I'm going to say, I friggin' love this thing. I love this show. This pilot was great. I absolutely love it. Your general thoughts in terms of don't blow the build up.
Sure.
Like, love, or hate, where are you with this?
I'm at like a lot. I'm not at love. I liked it quite a bit. I'm not quite at I think you're higher on it than me, because I really liked it. I wouldn't say that I loved it, but yeah, I really liked it.
What I'll start us off by saying is that, you know, one of the things that appeals to me about this show is that, after having seen Man of Steel on that 15 to 20 minutes on Krypton, I came away wanting to know more about that planet, to know more about its culture, to see different areas of Krypton that we've never seen before, to learn the politics of it all, and to meet other people that lived on that planet. And while Krypton, the show, is not set in the exclusively in the Man of Steel DC Films continuity, it does check off all the boxes that I wanted when I left the theater for more Krypton stuff, having watched.
And it takes quite a bit from that interpretation of Krypton.
Right. Well, we'll get to more of that in a second. But I think that the advantage of the fact that Krypton has of not pigeonholing itself into just that one aspect of Superman mythology is that it can cherry pick from different eras and different incarnations of the characters, of mythos. You know what I mean? And I think that works really well for the pilot. When I watched it, at the end of the pilot, I kept saying, you know what? That's a nice little celebration. That pilot was a good way of celebrating 80, without having Superman in it. It was still a nice way of celebrating 80 years of Superman. Because they gave you enough nods to Superman history that you could view it that way, and I appreciated it for that. And here's one of the things I want to know if you caught on. So the pilot, you know, the first thing we see is basically the voiceover, you know, Segel saying, you know, the story of this planet and our family is not how we died, but how we lived.
Yeah, talking to Kal-El.
Right. And then over, you know, along with that voiceover, we're seeing imagery of Val-El, Superman's great grandfather, on trial, and basically the Law Guild is accusing him of sedition and treason, right? Like he's making a case for we're not alone in the universe, there are threats to our way of life, and if we don't act, we're doomed, right? And then they're, you know, putting him on trial because he's saying that stuff for treason and sedition. And what I noticed what they did, and again, this is a callback to Superman the movie, is they've melded Jor-El's speech to the council from Superman the movie with Zod's crimes and blended them into one. And I thought that was cool. Then, you know, when we see him being sort of led to his death, he walks through this. Actually, before that, so one of the punishments is that not only him, but the rest of the El family has been stripped of their rank, and the fact that they're citizens, right? I thought this was cool because it really put an emphasis on the importance of a person's name and their rank, where we've seen it in certain comics where there has been an importance placed on it before, but not to this level. You know what I mean?
This means something. On my world, it did.
Right. No. Yeah. But what I'm saying is the fact that, but we're told that, but here we actually see it play out. You know what I'm saying? We're getting to watch it play out like we've never had before.
Yeah. And no. I totally agree with you. I'm just saying that it reminded, what you were saying reminded me of that scene from Batman v Superman.
Right.
You know,
and so the idea that the whole family would face consequences for one person's actions was kind of interesting.
But conversely, they would all face consequences for one person's decision. But conversely, when it came to them giving back Segel's honor, basically, and giving and letting him come back into society or whatever, however you would describe that, it was just an individual thing, which was interesting to me. So right. when they later rewarded him and brought him and gave him a rank again, then it didn't go for the rest of his family.
Sure. And the other thing I noticed, I want to get your thoughts on, when they're walking, you know, when they're leading him to his death, and he walks through that dark portal, or that you know, that doorway, whatever it is, that, you know, I guess a portal is a good
thing. Yeah, sure.
And then he basically falls to his quote unquote death. This is just my theory, but I'm willing to bet that that's a precursor to the Phantom Zone.
Okay. Yeah, I see where you're coming from. Yeah.
It's just a thought I had in my head. What I noticed, what I liked about this, what I liked that the pilot did was, when we first really pick up with, you know, Segel's story, he's kind of like a grifter at the bar, and, you know, him and his buddy, who I guess is the bar owner or just the bartender, are running a scam where he sort of steals money and then gets into a bar
fight
over the money, and then all the while the bartender has a bet going with the patrons of the bar to see how long Seg would last in a fight. And if the bartender's right, then he and Seg split the money. I mean, it's not really a desirable thing to do when you're thinking of Superman's ancestors or part of Superman's lineage. But I think when you realize why he's doing what he's doing, which is to help his family make ends meet, because they've been they're unranked, you could sympathize with him a little bit more.
And I don't think that Kal-El's grandfather, his ancestors in general, I don't think that they have to necessarily share the same values as Kal-El. We saw in Smallville that Jor-El had drastically different values than Kal-El in that iteration of the mythos.
No, right, but my point is that if he's going to get to a more Superman-ish place, I want it to happen gradually where he earns that.
But he's not Superman.
No, but I'm saying they're going to share certain values because there's going to be similarities. But I want those characters' traits to develop based on the character going through a journey and sort of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay. No. I get it. I see where you're saying that he's gonna you know, that there's going to be character arc there.
Whereas...
I'm just saying I don't think he necessarily has to end up in a place where he has the same values that his grandfather.
No. They don't have to all be the same. But what I'm saying, if there is going to be overlap and connectivity, I'd rather him do it the way they seem to be doing it, which is where he's going to go through life experiences and he's going to earn it, as opposed to have the show started off with him being a basically Superman light, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are already having all the same value. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
So I like the way they've gone about it. And what I notice, because you do see elements of Superman's character within SAG. Like, you know, the pilot makes a point of showing him coming to the rescue of a fellow unranked individual who is older, like an older gentleman. Who is homeless and is getting picked on and accosted by the military guild, and Seg jumps to his defense.
Yeah.
And then also when he stops the terrorist plot at the trial in the law guild, that's another Superman-ish kind of moment. So there are moments where you see flashes of it, and so it's present, but not like. What I'm saying is they haven't put him in that one box right off out of the get-go, and I like that. I look at SAG as a sort of mix of, especially with the scheme that he was running in the bar, and then sort of that he rebels authority. I look at, like, so you see the Superman elements, but you also have a little bit of Han Solo in him, and so there's a bit of both in it. So there's a little bit of Superman qualities and a little bit of Han Solo qualities, and I like that. In his character. And I like that, we then see he has the meeting with Adam Strange.
Smallville alum, Sean Cycle.
Yeah, are you going to say that every time I say Adam Strange?
Probably.
Well, stop that. He has that meeting where, Adam Strange says, basically tells him the whole spiel about, Krypton's in danger, and I'm from the future, and your grandson, the whole
yeah.
blah, blah, blah. And he's like, find the fortress, and he hands him the Sunstone key, which is very similar to what we saw in
Man of Steel. Yes, and that was one of the places I was referring to, where we really see, even though this is not set in the DCEU. As it was originally speculated, it might be. But there was a quote from David Goyer where he said it takes place 200 years before Man of Steel. But I think what he meant by that was just to give people a reference point. Like, okay, this is 200 years before all that stuff you saw happen at the beginning of Man of Steel. Because I know that when he said that quote, there was a bunch of speculation. Oh, is it set in the DCEU? No, it's not. Yeah. But they do, because Goyer is so heavily involved in the show. And he was obviously involved with Man of Steel. We see elements that are certainly inspired by Man of Steel's Krypton, like that key. And did you see, Adam, that they were giving out like these Krypton prize packs to some YouTubers on the DC Fans channel, and they gave them these portable chargers that are in the shape of those Sunstone crystals?
Oh, that's cool.
They were so cool. I was like, Can you? I'm curious if they are for sale or if they were just promotional items. But I would love one of those. Like, they're so cool. It was like this. It looks just like the ones they have on the show. It's got like the House of El symbol. They're blue. They're awesome, and they can charge your phone.
I'm sure they're gonna probably be up on eBay or go for sale.
Yeah, because I've been wanting one of those portable phone chargers for a while. I've been wanting to buy one, and I'm glad I held off on it, because if I can get a Superman related one, a Krypton one, I mean, shoot, that's even better.
Right. Yeah. And then the other part of the so you know Sega obviously doesn't really put too much thought. Like, at first he doesn't believe it. He's like, yeah, right. And I like the humorous part about, because Adam Strange is wearing the, you know, he's wearing jeans and basically jeans, a shirt, and a Detroit Tigers hat. And I like Seg's line of, is that a guild? And he's like, no, it's the Detroit Tigers. And obviously that's a nod to Jeff Johns, because he's from Detroit.
And I've also heard people point out, I didn't think of this, but I've heard multiple people point out now, that it might be a nod to Superman 2 when Zod asks, is this the planet? What does he say? He says something about planet Houston. Is this planet Houston?
Yeah, yeah. And then Seg says later on, I think he's from another planet called Detroit or something.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was what was more so the nod, I guess, to the thing from Superman 2. But yeah.
Yeah. So, the other interesting thing is when he goes and confronts his parents, right, about it, they sort of shrug it off and say they don't really know what it is. And they're lying to him, but so obviously. But so he pretends to drop the subject, but then, you know, takes the Sunstone Key back and goes and investigates it further. But two things I noticed, and again, another Star Wars reference in honor of our friend, Rick Shue. the hut-like underdwelling that Seg and his parents live in, plus that scene where they deny him, reminds me of Luke Skywalker talking with his parents about the lightsaber and Obi-Wan Kenobi before he goes off on his training to become a Jedi. And also, the little hut that Luke Skywalker lived in, the interiors of their house kind of reminded me of that. So I just thought that was a nice little nod to that. The other thing I liked is that in between Seg's main story of finding the fortress, Krypton takes us and gives us a little peek at the different guilds, or a couple of them. So we see the military guild, which is sort of run and operated by the Zod lineage. And it's never specified, and I don't know if it's been revealed in interviews or anything, but I don't particularly know how these people are related to Zod. Like, what's their actual, you know, relation?
Well, there's ancestors.
But I want to know specific. Like, we know that Seg is the grandfather, right? What I'm saying, we don't have a specific.
Oh, like we don't know. Like we don't know. Like
we don't know the specifics of the lineage. Like and.
Right, I see.
But one thing I can tell you is that Zod got his forcefulness, intimidation, violence, determination from Allura Zod, hands down. Because, man, that woman is ruthless. She was intimidated. Intimidating.
She stabbed her own daughter through the hand.
Yeah, and the funny thing, the weird thing was, she's basically there training, and they're actually doing some martial arts, which is cool. Because I'm a martial artist, and I appreciate people actually doing some martial arts when they have these things.
Did you appreciate the martial arts on Arrow with Richard Dragon recently, where we were seeing that?
Yeah, it was good from what I saw. Yeah.
I was just curious. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. But you know, so she's got basically her daughter, which is Lyta Zod, in an arm lock.
Yeah.
And she's like, yield. And at first Lyta's like, no. And then she's like, yield. So she finally does.
She didn't say yield before Zod though.
Well, okay. Don't give it time. This, that, you know, that kneel before Zod.
Oh yeah. 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 I'm sure.
And so, I could make a comment, but I'll refrain. Because it's not necessarily PG-13, so I'll keep it myself. But,
nice of you to show restraint, Adam.
Yeah, well, once in a while. And so when Lyta finally yields, she's like, Azog never yields, and she stabs her in the head.
That was vicious.
And I'm like, but you told her to yield. What the hell do you want her to do? Question.
Have you seen this week's Gotham yet? Okay, which was more brutal? The getting hammered in the hand when Lee hammered Samson in the hand, or getting stabbed in the hand like what happened on Krypton?
Well, I'm going to say when Sophia did it in Gotham, it was more lethal because they actually showed it.
Yeah.
Whereas they cut away when Lee
did it. Okay, yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, so yeah, when Sophia did it to Lee. Yeah.
Yeah, but so what I noticed about Lyta or Lita or however you pronounce that, and you can tell me if you notice this as well. She seems to be struggling with the whole, you know, forceful, demanding leadership aspect of being part of the military.
Yeah, she seems to have more compassion than her mother does.
She has compassion. She has a morality. And when she's out in the field, it's almost like she's putting on an act because she has to be part of that guild. That's what I noticed, right?
Yeah. And speaking of her mother, Adam?
Yes, I know. She was Philippa in Wonder Woman.
Yes, yeah, that's what I was about to say. I thought you'd be happy because I'm not bringing up a Smallville alum. I'm bringing up a DC.
No, it's a Wonder Woman reference.
She was in Justice League, too, I believe.
Of course. Yeah, of course. So yeah, she does seem more compassionate, and it seems like a struggle for her. It's almost like, even though she was predestined to be in the military guild, she doesn't belong there. If you catch my drift. Mm-hmm. And they also introduced this hidden star-crossed lovers sort of relationship between her and Sagan.
Which it turns out is not that hidden, because we find out that her mother does know about it.
Right, but at the beginning you think it's hidden, but it definitely star-crossed, because I think that's going to be an on again, off again thing. For sure.
To bring up another Star Wars reference, the room that they were having sex in that we saw, did that remind you of Anakin and Padme's room?
Kind of, a little bit. Yeah, you're right. Kind of. Also, you know what I appreciated?
What's that?
There were no silver silk sheets when they were having sex. Like they were conveniently placed in Superman 2 in the middle of the porch. Like, they were actually in a bedroom designed for sleeping or having sex in, not in the middle of the fortress where, hey, look, there's a bed.
Oh, my goodness. I still don't understand.
It's ridiculous.
They did it in the Smallville Season 11 comics. There's a bed in there, too.
Yeah, and I think it's stupid in there, too. Because it's a nod to Superman 2, and I don't like that scene in Superman 2, so there it is. But, yeah, specifically because Superman said, or Clark said he had an apartment. Three blocks from Lois. So why is there a bed there?
What?
It's not like he has to clock in at the fortress and is working overtime. Like, Jesus Christ. Anyway, let's So there's that hidden. And then we go to the Law Guild, and this is the earlier scene I mentioned where Segel stops the plot, the terrorist plot.
The bomb on his hand? Wasn't that really cool?
That was a cool effect.
You remember what it reminded me of? Do you remember in Young Justice the bomb that Arsenal puts on Lex Luthor's hand? This coil bomb?
Yes.
Did it remind you of that? Or do you see?
It did, for sure.
That's what I immediately thought of.
So After Seg, you know, assists in foiling the plot, but before actually we move on there, did you notice that the terrorist organization is called Black
Zero?
Yes.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Which is a reference to Man of Steel, because the name of the ship that the prisoner ship that is essentially the Fortress of Solitude in Man of Steel is called the Black Zero.
Mm-hmm. And it's also in so the comics, there's the Black Zero is a thing too.
Right, but not in the same manner as it was in Man of Steel.
Yeah.
But I thought that it was a nice nod. And regardless.
Yeah, definitely.
So then, as a reward, what was his name? Dor. What's the guy's name? That.
Oh, Nyssa Vex's father.
No. Yeah, the father.
Darren Vex.
That's it. Darren Vex, which is surprisingly normal for a name.
Which is surprising? What for a name? Sorry, I was sneezing.
Surprisingly normal for a Kryptonian.
Oh, Darren, yeah.
But
this is somewhat normal too, because Nyssa Al Ghul is
Speaking of, I'd like to see her and never mind. I was gonna say I'd like to see her and Nyssa Al Ghul pair up.
Oh my goodness!
But that's not here.
Oh my goodness!
I have to go there. I'm sorry.
I should have seen it coming.
You set yourself up for that. But anyway,
But this is this is something that actually one of the guys on DC Daily Drop brought it up. That both on Arrow and on Krypton, the protagonist has been in like sort of like a forced marriage with someone named Nyssa.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Funny coincidence.
Although if it was me, I wouldn't mind being married to either. I just want to put that out there, or both, whatever floats your boat. But anyway, Darren Vex basically binds, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Segel to his daughter Nyssa, and this happens apparently when people turn 23 on Krypton. And as Jordan alluded to, he gets the benefit of moving up in station in life, but his parents don't. And this binding will allow Seg to be part of the Science Council. I think because that's where he was destined to be part of.
Which I guess is foreshadowing Jor-El being a scientist,
sure.
Right?
Sure. And then, so the next time we see Nyssa and Seg together, they're going to the Genesis Chamber. And what I really like the way they handled this. They did this really cool thing where it's kind of like a DNA fingerprinting thing where both of them put their hand on the device. And it gives you a holographic rendering of your child. And it tells you the sex of the child, how long it's going to live, the name, and what station it's going to have in life. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and I do too. And that was the scene where we really got to see a lot of Nyssa Vex and sort of get to see who she was. And I will say, she has this attitude that I feel like is going to be very entertaining to watch moving forward.
Oh, let me tell you my theory. But before I tell you my theory, going back to the Genesis Chamber thing, the pods looked a lot different than the way it was depicted in Man of Steel. In fact, it was kind of like the whole setup of the Genesis Chamber. To me, was a hybrid of what we saw in Man of Steel, the movie. Uh-huh. And what we saw in Man of Steel, the 1986 miniseries reboot of Superman.
Okay.
So like the premise and the idea is very similar to Man of Steel, the movie. But the look of them reminded me of the comic, where it looked like the birthing matrix from that comic. If you go back and look at some art, you'll see that what we saw in the show looks like the birthing matrix is from the comic.
Oh, cool.
So I thought that.
Thinking when I was watching, I was like, huh, this is, I thought it looked really cool, but I was like, this is very different from the Genesis Chamber of Man of Steel.
So it's a mix of both. It's a mix of both.
I feel like I should bring this up now because it's related to that. The visuals on this show are just really outstanding. Like some of that stuff, Genesis Chamber was really cool looking.
Yeah.
You have any idea what the budget is on this show? Because I was looking at some of that stuff, and I was like, man, this looks so good for TV.
I don't know, but it's definitely more than the CW shows.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, just some of those sets even, like the Fortress set. I'm looking at that and I'm like, I can't believe I'm seeing this. I can't believe that they've got that these are regular standing sets that they've got on a TV show. Like this is
We're going to get to the Fortress next, but hold on a second. Going back to your point about Nyssa and her thing. Her attitude and demeanor. You're right. It's going to be very entertaining.
Yeah.
But to me, it's very reminiscent of how Feyora/Ursa would behave and carry themselves. Like this air of superiority and dominance. You know what I mean?
Okay. I didn't pick up on that, but I guess I can see that, so, yeah.
I could see her becoming a Feyora-type character.
Okay.
Down the road. The other thing I'll notice is if you look at the actress and the way she looks on Krypton and the way she looks normally, she is a hybrid to me of N.J. Trow, who played Feyora in Man of Steel, and Margot Robbie. Which to me, no matter how this pilot turned out, that combination alone would have had me watching every week. I just want to point that out because that's pretty damn phenomenal. I was going to swear, but I won't. It's pretty damn phenomenal. And I'm just going to, every time she comes on screen, I'm going to be like that GIF with, or not the GIF, the emoji with the heart eyes. So what's the actress's name?
Wallace Day.
Her portrayal was intriguing. I can't wait to see more of her. But visually, she's stunning. So I thought I'd put much like the rest of the show. But visually, she's stunning. So good kudos to the casting department on that one. Thank you for that. But moving on to the Fortress. Back to Seg's main plot of finding the Fortress. You mentioned that he and what's her name, Layla Zod do the horizontal one. and as a result,
I don't think I put it that way.
No, I did, but I like to clarify. As a result of staying around too long, he gets caught past curfew, and apparently unranked people have a curfew, and so he's being chased down by the military guild. And just as they were about to rough Seg up, his mother comes in this ship. I can't even remember what it's called, but this friggin' like spaceship.
Yeah.
To rescue him, right? And along the way.
And did that rescue remind you of Batman Gotham by Gaslight, the animated movie? Anyway.
Household.
When Selina rescues Bruce, when he's fleeing from the police, when they think he's when they think he's the Ripper, and he gets into the carriage.
Oh yeah, right. But she did it in a carriage, which is why I was getting confused.
Yeah. Well, basically it was a carriage instead of one of those ships. But yeah, like he's walking, he's in an alleyway, and then all of a sudden he pulls up, and then he gets in the carriage. So it reminded me of that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I agree with that. So then she rescues him with that ship, and once he gets in, she confirms that the Fortress of Solitude is real, and she takes him there. And what I loved about that is just the fact that the location where the fortress is an Arctic locale, okay? And that Arctic locale is a callback to what I'm referring to it as where the fortress is in Superman, the animated series, because it's actually in the Arctic, right? And it's a cool way of doing a nod to Donner's fortress without having to go too heavy-handed with that crystal chandelier stuff that bothers me so much. So it was again another example of this show doing the best of both worlds. So I like when they get there and the light flashes on the the door logo, and it's the, you know, the S shield or the House of L.
Glyph. Yeah, and I think that's the first moment when you get the John Williams theme playing. Yes,
right before they go to the commercial. The John Williams Superman theme is there. It's slowed down and feels really, really epic the way it sounds because it's...
Oh, yeah, I got chills. And I know I criticized... I just want to say this. I know I criticized Justice League for using the John Williams theme.
Hypocrite.
No, here's why I think there's a difference. The Justice League was already set in a universe that had established its own amazing Superman theme, which, yes, technically... not technically, that's not the right word, but I prefer over the John Williams theme. But I still really like the John Williams theme, and I think that for a show that hasn't established its own Superman theme, like, I think it's great to bring it back for this. Like, I have no problem with that.
Now hear me out, because I totally get where you're coming from. But to me, the key is the way the theme was arranged and slowed down and everything. Had they done something like that in Justice League, I think it would have been even better. Like, had they used the John Williams theme in Justice League, but as done on Krypton, I think it might have
played better, but I still feel like it shouldn't have been in the movie. I still think they should have just stuck with the
they should have used the Krypton theme in the ship for sure. But what I'm saying to you, we know that wasn't gonna happen. So assume that wasn't gonna that was gonna stay true and it wasn't gonna happen. Had they used this version of the John Williams theme during the resurrection instead of the generic Elfman theme they used, I think it would have flowed better.
Okay, I'll agree with you that it would have been better, but I still think that the best. Yeah.
I'm saying regardless of that fact, because we know that that should have been the case. Given that it's not, though, had it played out like Krypton played out and sounded like it did on Krypton, I think it would have went over better and it would have fit more. It would have fit a little better in the tone with what the DC Films universe had already established.
I can agree with that.
And then what I like about the interior of the fortress is because it still maintains that Arctic look and feel, but it's like a melding pot of the scout ship from Man of Steel and the animated series Fortress. Again, I'm going to call back to that. Because did you notice that? Because the way they play it is that was the Fortress of Solitude on this show. Its purpose on the show, and it works in beautifully, is that, and it makes total sense. It was a scientific lab hideaway that Val-El used to search, study, and corroborate his findings about life in the universe beyond Kryptonians. And did you notice he had specimens from other world in in glass cases?
You know, I don't know if I noticed that. I noticed some of the stuff he had around, but I didn't notice that, I don't think.
Yeah, well, there were. And to me, when I saw that, you know what it reminded me of? Again, the animated series. Because Superman has a zoo in that,
yes, in that, yeah,
show. And in the comics, devoted to other, you know, other life forms from other worlds. And I thought that is a great bit of foreshadowing. I love that. And I love that it takes its nods not only from the animated series, but from the comics as well.
Were you able to tell what anything in there, in any of those was? Like, was there a Black Mercy in there?
I think there was.
Was there a Black Mercy in there?
There might have been, but I was like, ooh, my initial thought was, ooh, look, it's the precursor of Superman's zoo. And I'm like, awesome.
Because, the Black Mercy is from Krypton, yes? Or am I wrong about that?
I think you're right.
That would be cool if they did something with that on Krypton on the show. There's one thing that was in Man of Steel that I think the show that I would have liked to see in the show. Maybe we still will in the future. But you remember in Man of Steel all the wildlife that we saw on Krypton? I would have liked to have seen that in the show. Like that animal Jor-El was riding.
You got to remember though, Jordan. we've only seen a very small glimpse of what's on
Krypton. Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I said we might see it going forward. So I'd like to see that going forward if we see it.
But the fortress made sense.
Yeah.
I thought. I love the nod again. I love that they're pulling from more than just Man of Steel or the Donner stuff. And then, of course, you know, and what I love about this show is that the three areas of Krypton they showed us have a distinct look to them. Like, they look unique. Like, it's one world, but they're different locales, like in real life. Like, not everything is uniform. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I love that variety. And every locale on Krypton that they showed us, the cinematography was beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, this was film quality cinematography and visuals.
I agree.
It was. And it was amazing. So then, you know, you have the military guild tracks them, basically is able to hunt them down and chase them back home, right? And so before they get there, Seg's mom tells him to hide, right?
Yeah.
They come in, they're looking for him because they tracked his life signature in the ship, so they know he was there. And so, to prevent them from searching the home, she says she stole the ship because she's part of the Black Zero. Also because she didn't want them to find the fortress, right? So she basically automatically gets arrested and then is sentenced to death on trial. And then the husband, to save his wife, says, no, she's not part of Black Zero, I am. Right?
Yeah.
So then, you know, things get out of hand. People get rowdy at the trial. Shit happens, and Allura Zahn has to... She basically kills both of Seg's parents.
Yeah, that was a shocking moment for me. I did not see that coming.
No, neither did I. But the fact that he had to stand there and watch as his parents died, two things. Reminded me a lot of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I definitely thought of that too. Yeah.
But also, it gives him another thing in common with his grandson. Because, look, when Superman sees a holographic image of the end of Krypton, like what happened on Krypton, he's watching Jor-El and Lara, his parents, die. And there's nothing he can do about it. He's helpless.
Yeah.
When he sees Jonathan Kent die, whether it be in Superman the movie or Man of Steel, all he can do is stand there and watch. He's helpless.
Or Smallville.
And Smallville as well. Pretty much any incarnation. And like the scream that he, like Seg, yells out, the agonizing scream, was chilling, but it also, again, it reminded me of, you know, Christopher Reeve, Henry Cavill, and even Tom Holland.
And so, Cameron Cuff's performance there in that scene was excellent. And
he was.
And I just want to say, because I mentioned this earlier, but I'll say it again here. He comes off as really likable. That was one takeaway I had from this. He's a really likable protagonist.
Even though he's like a grifter at the beginning and stuff, you're right. He's really
likable.
So then, you know, basically after this, Seg finds his way back to the fortress because he wants to basically, I guess, to decompress and sort of
be alone. Well, I love that because he's using the fortress as a place for solitude, just like Kal-El will use his fortress.
Right, exactly. It's again, more foreshadowing and connectivity with his grandson.
Yeah.
The difference is he's not alone, he's joined by Adam Strange.
Yes. And Smallville alum, Sean Sipos.
Oh, for God's sake. Adam Strange. We know.
Just gotta remind you. I guess I should mention, in case anybody doesn't know who he was on Smallville, he was in the episode Rush. That's season 2, episode 14. And he was, when Chloe was infected by one of the parasites from the Kawachi Caves, and so when she was affected by the parasite, it was the guy that Clark walked in on her kissing in The Torch. So that's who Sean Cyples played on Smallville. Smallville alum Sean Cyples as Adam Strange. He returns, and I really like what he's bringing to the character so far. But I was curious what your thoughts were about him having to keep, like, him keeping disappearing, because we know that's what I was thinking too, because the Zeta beams are, they're basically very unpredictable, at least, because the way I understand it is, Adam Strange, at first, they're very unpredictable, so, like, he can only use them at certain times, like, he has to be in the right place at the right time to get on one, but then he winds up, like, what we see in Young Justice, by that point, he's made them so that he can use them at any time, anywhere, whenever he wants to go somewhere. But my question is, has this version of Adam Strange figured out how to use the Zeta beams to not only track, because, like, the Zeta beams, traditionally, I've never known them to travel through time. I've just known that they travel through from place to place. So has he found a way to make them travel through time as well? Is that what he's doing?
That I'm not sure. I know there's a time traveling element to the character.
So, oh, is there?
Okay.
Because I just knew that he goes to RAN, right? That's all. Yeah. So I always thought that the Zeta beams were just transporters. I didn't realize that they could make him travel in time too. So that's what I was curious about.
But I like this character for what it was used for in the pilot, in the sense that, for the most part of it, he's the audience's gateway into the world of Krypton.
Yes, and that's what really appealed to me about his character, is that for me, and this is sort of one of my, I guess really my biggest issue with the show, is that, it's not inherently anything wrong with the show, it's just my sensibilities, if that makes sense, which is that this is a really, frankly, this is a hard sci-fi show. And hard sci-fi has, with the exception of the Green Lantern Corps, that's never really been my jam. So just on that premise, it's not really my jam. Like, if this show weren't a Superman show, it probably wouldn't be something I'd be interested in watching.
Whereas, I'm the opposite. I love the sci-fi aspect.
Okay.
It's why I love Man of Steel so much, because they took it in a more sci-fi direction.
I got you.
And it's also why Smallville was a lot more focused on the relationships and the romance.
Yeah.
And that's mostly not my jam. Like, I can't stand it when CW does.
You see, we're the exact opposites there, I guess. Because, like, that's what I love so much about Smallville. That's what I love about, because, like, I've talked about it with Smallville before, how that show I started watching because it was a Superman show. But then what really made me fall in love with it, and the reason it's my favorite show of all time, is because, Very quickly into Smallville, there were points where I was like, I could almost forget that it was a Superman show and just love it as this small town teen romantic drama.
Yeah, see, whereas to me, if it wasn't a Superman show, if, like, there was no Clark Kent, there was no Lana Lang, there was no Pete Ross, if there was none of that, I probably wouldn't have watched it.
I got you. Yeah, you see, this is where we're opposites. Because, like, yes, obviously, the Superman stuff is a big appeal for me for Smallville, obviously. Like I said, that's why I started watching the show. But for me, that's my jam. I like stuff like, I love that it's a small town teen romantic drama, and that's what really, really hooked me and really made me love it. And the Klonoa relationship, obviously, as a part of that.
None of that stuff held me.
You see, and so that's why we're like two sides. We're polar opposites here, because then we look at Krypton. If it weren't for the Superman stuff, this wouldn't be my kind of show. Like, this isn't my jam, really. So that's where this show had trouble. That's where, like, this is something I was talking to Tim Beadle from DCComics.com about. I was talking to him about this, how it's different for me here. How Smallville hooked me by being the stuff that was how do I put this? Like I was just saying to you. The non-Superman stuff in Smallville, just the idea that it's a small town high school teen drama, is what really – one of the things that really I love so much about Smallville. Whereas this show, I started watching it for the same reason I started watching Smallville, which is because it's Superman-related and I love Superman. But But that's about, I mean, that's what I love. That's what I, that's the stuff that I love about Krypton.
And it's the same thing with, it's the same thing with Gotham, right? If Gotham didn't have that, the Batman trappings, and was just a police procedural, I wouldn't be watching.
I got you.
But to take
it back to Krypton, so if this weren't a Superman show, that's how it is for me. If this weren't a Superman show, this probably wouldn't be a show I would watch. But like I said, I do really like this pilot. But I think the thing that holds me back from loving it is it's still not really my genre. I'm not, just to use an example, and you know this, Adam. I'm not a Star Trek fan. I'm not a Star Wars fan, really. Like that. That's not my. With the exception of the Green Lantern Corps, that's not stuff that really appeals to me that much. So that's why this show is, like, I liked it. Again, I really like this pilot, but that's what holds me back from loving it, is it's still not really my genre. So.
But, yeah, but to go back to the end, where Adam Strange is basically like, you know, I'm sorry for your loss, but you're not the last of the line, and he pulls out the cape.
Yeah.
And basically, that's when they really key in on the whole sort of Terminator plotline of it all. Whereas, you know, like, there's this villain out there who's trying to end your line and sort of destroy. If the cape acts as like an hourglass, and as you know, once it disappears, both Earth and Krypton are basically screwed.
That is, I guess that's what I was trying to get to with what I was saying before. One of the reasons Adam Strange, I think, really helps this show for me personally is because one of my issues a lot of times with like really hard sci-fi like this is that I find it hard to connect to these characters that feel so foreign from Earth. It's hard for me to connect to it. And so for me, having a character from Earth like Adam Strange, who's seeing this, who's seeing everything on Krypton with the same kind of eyes that we see it, which is being from Earth, he helps me connect to the show.
But also to your point, or something that to help your view, is that even though he's from Krypton, Sagal is going through very human feelings and experiences, which is another, you know, thing that should help you out.
So
as he shows him the cape, look, I'm a sucker, you pull out that cape, and you know, I'm like, oh boy, here it is, like you've got me now. And again, this is an example of not being beholden to one particular Superman mythology, because the cape has an S on the back, which is more in line with the comic books and the, you know, the Christopher Reeve and even Smallville iterations.
Yeah.
And there's something about seeing that symbol on the back of the cape. And, you know, the movies can use the excuse of, well, we can't animate it CGI with it. And it's, I think that's a crock of crap as an excuse, but it is what it is. So I just love seeing that. And the fact that it's being used as an hourglass is the kind of,
you're going to hate me for saying this, Adam. I'm still hoping that this show, I know there's like almost like a, I would say there's like a, maybe a 5% chance of this actually being the case. I want this to be a prequel to Tyler Hoechlin's Superman.
Not gonna happen.
I know it's probably not gonna happen, but it, like, ideally, like, I would love it to be connected like that, where
here's,
because
you have a better chance of him showing up on Metropolis eventually than you do here.
You're probably right about that. I'm not saying he ever has to show up, but if we got some kind of confirmation, and like this show, neither show would really, because it's so, they're so far apart, neither Supergirl nor this show would have to really acknowledge that fact that much. But if there was just some kind of nod that says, okay, yes, this is a prequel to that version of Superman, I would love that.
Never happen. It'll never happen. But, so yeah, the whole, like I said, the cape being used as an hourglass.
Like, I know other people have brought this up too, but I'll bring it up as well. The sort of, it's sort of like Back to the Future with the picture that it keeps fading away.
Yes. And you know, even though we saw the cape in the trailers, the context of the episode, of the scene in the episode, mm-hmm. really adds to that moment, even though we've seen it already. And the same goes with Brainiac. After everything we've seen in the pilot, as he's building up Brainiac, that reveal is even more terrifying.
That reveal, that little glimpse we got of Brainiac, even though we'd already seen it in the promotional material, it was still awesome. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, he looks so cool.
And then again, to end the show with Zeg holding the cape and looking up and standing in the center of the fortress, you know, with the Superman glyph
and the John Williams theme again.
Yeah, and the theme kicks in again. I'm like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, know? I got chills again.
Damn it, Danny Elfman, why did you use it like this?
That was awesome.
And this is from somebody who defended it in Justice League. But even I was like, you son of a. The one thing that I want from that I hope they do it. Uh-huh. It's not a negative because I'm not going to knock him after one episode.
Sure. Is.
Adam Strange better be in his comic book outfit at some point.
Yeah, I don't need it to. I don't need it to be exactly like it is in the comic, but
but something more similar cool. to it.
I agree.
So, but overall, I got no complaints about this pilot, man. I loved it. I just absolutely top to bottom. You know, I started watching half an hour in so I could fast forward through commercials.
Okay.
And when it was over, I'm like, damn it, it's
already I don't know how it aired in Canada, but here it was limited commercial interruption. And like,
no, we got a shit ton of commercials.
We got it. Actually, it was here. They actually, some of the, like, it was even, okay. So it was limited commercial interruption. The way they did it was that they put actually promos for the show in the commercial. So like cast interviews they put during the commercial breaks or part of the commercial.
See, I would have loved to see more of what's, from that Nyssa Vex there. Like, why didn't you show me commercials of her? I would have been... I wouldn't have fast-forwarded
to that. There were so few commercials that the show only... And I guess it was a 40... It was a traditional 43-minute episode, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it was.
Because it was so... There were so few commercials here that they actually... It ended like 10 minutes before 11. And so... They actually, that some of that making, I don't know if you watched that documentary that they did, that little mini documentary, but they put, they put like, at the end of the episode, they aired like a clip from that mini documentary too for like the last 10 minutes. I was like, it was cool.
I'm not gonna uh-huh. lie, during that documentary, if I was Cameron Kuf and I was holding the Action Comics number one uh-huh. machine, I would have ran out of there faster than you could say hello, and I would have made.
Oh my goodness! Did you see on the most recent episode of Gotham that there that guy who was holding Martine captive
was reading Detective Comics? Somebody was reading. Yeah. Yes.
That yeah.
Was nice. Cool. I was trying to make out what issue number that was, but
I couldn't either.
It
was an old issue though.
Definitely before 27, because if he was reading Detective Comics number 27. It would have had Batman
yeah,
on it.
Yeah, it was prior to that.
And that would have been a spoiler. For Bruce. so we can't have that. But I honest to God, I love this pilot. I've got no negative. I just can't.
Wow, that is very high praise, Adam.
I mean, aside from what you mentioned about being really sci-fi. Was that your main complaint?
I feel like it's almost unfair for me to criticize it for that, because like that's what it is. I mean, that's like me like, for example.
Well, it's on yeah. sci-fi.
For example, I don't like westerns, but I can't criticize a western for being a western. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like
if you watch The Lone Ranger and say to yourself, "Oh, this is a stupid western." Well, hello. Why did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, exactly. But like no, even like here's the point, like. And what I mean when I say I don't like sci-fi, obviously I like sci-fi, because like all of superhero stuff, or most of superhero stuff, I mean, I guess some of the more vigilante stuff, like I don't know if that I'd quite consider Batman and Green Arrow.
Yeah, that's more
sci-fi. But you know, a lot of superhero stuff is sci-fi. So obviously I do like sci-fi, but I don't like, I'm not a big fan of like hard sci-fi, like space opera type sci-fi for the most part. Yeah. So that's what I'm referring to when I say that it's not really.
Yeah, no, I hear.
Okay.
You. Okay. I hear you.
So. I guess, in terms of, like, criticism, like, specific criticism, it's hard for me to criticize anything in particular. Like, I would have liked to see some wildlife, I guess, in this first episode. But, sure. I mean, that's a tiny nitpick.
But even that's hard to criticize because we don't know if we'll
see it. We could see it in the future. It's so that,
like, wait and see.
That's, right? A tiny thing. I really don't have that much specific to criticize other than that, yeah, it's not quite my type of show. But, again, it's the opposite of Smallville for me. So it's like the Superman stuff is what really, like, that's what makes me watch this show. And obviously on Smallville, I love the Superman stuff, but it's like, you understand what I'm saying there.
And I gotta, and you know, we should make a shout out. Like, gotta think about it. The visuals and even that 15 seconds or five, not even 15 seconds, 5 to 10 seconds of Brainiac.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're spoiled with how good Brainiac
is. Oh, it's incredible.
And how cinematic he looks. Like, I'll say it straight out, and I love these movies, but I'll say this. When Brainiac looks better than Doomsday, Steppenwolf, and Ares.
And Enchantress.
I could go to the washroom and take a dump and it look better than when the Enchantress look like at the end.
Well, yes, at the good specification at the end. Again, you agree with me there, right? That she looked really good at the beginning.
The Tim Burton version I liked, but after that, yeah. The green belly dancer thing.
That was not very good.
But when Brainiac looks better than those three CGI heavy things that had a $200 million budget attached to them, it deserves an extra round of applause because
it's awesome. And I mean, the skull ship looks awesome too.
Yeah. And to know that we're going to get Mongol and Doomsday, and imagine how they're going to look.
And I think Hawk Girl too.
Yeah. And Hawkman even maybe. And there's hope for a Green Lantern somewhere, Tomar Rey or however the hell you pronounce his name.
He was the Green Lantern that failed to save Krypton, right?
Yeah, what a failure. What a, fire that guy immediately. Kick him out of the core.
It wasn't his fault.
Yeah, but where was he?
Wasn't that the whole point? I've never read that comic, but I've heard people talk about that comic. And wasn't that the whole point was that that it wasn't actually his fault? And, like, he had all this guilt about not saving Krypton and then...
My thing is, why couldn't he have been there to, like, at least rescue some of the friggin' people?
Well, I think they explain it in the story. Again, I've never read this. Have you read that comic?
Which one?
I think it's called The Green Lantern Who Failed to Save Krypton or something like that, I think is what it's called.
I'll look it up. I've never read it.
Oh, okay. Because I think that's the point of the comic, is that they explain that.
Well, I gotta look it up.
Okay.
Yeah. Sight unseen, not having read it, fire that guy. I guess then we could rate the
pilot. Okay.
All right, what's your reading?
I'm gonna give it a B+, I think. And yeah. I mean, I don't have that many specific things to call out that I didn't like about it. It's just that, like, but again, I liked it a lot, but what keeps it from being an A for me is just that it's not exactly my cup of tea as a TV show, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally get that. Okay. And whereas from my perspective, I'm going to give it an A. And if you want to read my written review, you can do so at Revenge of the Fans. But, excuse me. The reason I didn't give it an A+, which I think is what I gave Black Lightning's pilot, is that the only reason I gave Black Lightning that extra plus or that extra point is because it dealt with socially relevant themes, that society is struggling with today. And Krypton's pilot didn't have that. It wasn't required to have that. I mean, I'm sure it will deal with relevant themes that we're experiencing on Earth, you know, as the series goes on. But for right now, it wasn't
there. I feel like maybe it did a little bit with, like, the caste system that they have and stuff.
Yeah, there was a little bit about that. But it's not, like, the caste system is not... I mean, it was there. But I'm saying in terms of, like, just more topical stuff that we're dealing with right now, like, you know, racial issues and... All that stuff is so important.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you're right. Obviously, Black Lightning has way more of that than this show. Yeah, yeah.
That extra point, I think, is warranted. However, as a pilot, I was more engrossed in Krypton because I'm more invested in the Superman mythology. I'm just trying to explain the difference of why I give that one an extra a point, if you will. And I know we're going to disagree here, but I think we need to explain why we disagree. As I mentioned, I've had a lot of experience with Superman on television. And I'll include Superboy in the pile. But for me, from a pilot of a Superman show perspective, my ranking is Superboy.
That's last. Is Sam going to throw a fit?
Sorry, Sam. Well, you probably would if it was. Well, you are probably going to in a second.
Oh no! I know. I think I saw where you were going with this, and I'm scared. No.
But no, don't be too scared.
Okay.
But no, to me, Superboy got a lot better from seasons 2 through 4. Season 1 was a tough chore to get through, for me personally. Okay. How many Superman shows are we? Just so I get my bearings. Krypton, Smallville, Krypton.
Are you counting Supergirl?
Oh shit! I forgot about that. Okay, hold on. Smallville, Krypton, Supergirl, Adventures of Superman, Lois and Clark,
Superboy,
Superboy, and George Reeves' Adventures of Superman. Right. So it's 6.
Yeah.
So in 6th place is Superboy.
Okay.
In 5th place is The Adventures of Superman.
Okay.
In 4th place is Supergirl.
Okay.
In 3rd place is Lois and Clark.
Okay.
In 2nd place is Smallville, and in 1st place is Krypton. And I'll tell you why.
Hey, at least you had Smallville 2nd, dude.
it's twofold. One is the fact that I'm less inclined to like the sappy crap that we find on the CW. And Smallville had a lot of that.
I know what you're referring to with that, but not sappy crap. That's not what.
It's just a figure of speech since I put Smallville 2nd. I know
what you're trying to refer to, but that's not what it is. That's.
On Smallville it wasn't, but most of the CW there was a lot of and WB at the time. It was built.
Okay, what are you really? I think I know what you're really referring to, but what are you really referring to in
the reason?
In objective terms. In objective terms.
Okay. What I'm saying is that the reason why Krypton bumped Smallville out of first place was that Smallville featured heavily, even in the pilot, heavily featured the romantic angles.
Yes.
Of it all.
And that's one of the things I love so much about it.
Yeah. Which is not typically my cup of tea. Where, see, you know, you mentioned that movie, whatever it's called, The Space Between
Us. Yes, The Space Between Us, yes.
Yeah, right. That's a movie I would never, unless there was a superhero actor that just got cast, or I was about to get laid by Margot Robbie, and it was conditional on watching that movie, I wouldn't watch that movie. I just kept it right on and say it. So,
you see, and as a contrast, I love that movie, and that's my kind of movie in a lot of ways.
Right. So the romance angle brings Smallville. One of the reasons Smallville goes down a peg to number 2. The other reason is that first freak of the week on Smallville.
Jeremy Creek.
While he was okay as an adversary for your first episode. Featuring the young man that will become Superman, it was.
Well, that's the thing. He's not going to be fighting Brainiac on his first day.
I get that, but it should have been somebody else other than Electricity Man.
I liked him a lot.
I'm just giving you my perspective. Okay. Those are the two reasons.
But it does shed a lot of light though on our differing perspectives here, given that. The thing that distracts from Smallville for you is one of the things one of my absolute favorite things about it. So, it's interesting. It's interesting.
And Supergirl falls prey to that same kind of thing, in the grand scheme of things. Whereas they harp on the Mon-El and Supergirl crap, and you know Jeremy is dating the That's Wynn. His real name. Finn Wynn, whatever the hell his name is. Should have been Jimmy is dating that alien chick. You know,
but Jimmy. But does Krypton has romance in it too already?
Yeah, but hold on, but it's far more understated than the pilot of Smallville or what we saw in Supergirl. Like, Supergirl starts with her obsessing on a date, about a date, and then being rejected. Like, Supergirl starts with that.
You see, and I love that stuff.
Yeah, but see, this is where we're different. So, but hey, you gotta give it to Smallville. It was up, for 10 years, it was up there. And number one on Superman.
TV. Yeah.
So, and now it's number two, and I don't see.
Yeah, I was pleased to hear when you said it was still at number two.
What? Where did you think it was
going? I don't know. I was very curious to find out. I thought you might have Lois and Clark above it because I know how much you love Lois and Clark.
No, because Lois and Clark devolved into that romance stuff too. But
I thought for nostalgic reasons though, I thought you might have Lois and Clark above it. But.
But Lois and Clark is more about what it says. Lois and Clark being a couple. So at the end of the day, that still gets in the way of it being any higher than it is.
Okay. And then Krypton's number one for you.
Yeah, like put it this way. I'll say this. Had Adventures of Superman come out in modern times with better effects, it would have been ahead of Lois and Clark. I'll tell you that.
Okay. For me, I've only seen three of those pilots. And it would go, I've seen, of the other shows, the only one I've seen any of is Lois and Clark. I've seen...
But did you see
the pilot? No, I've never seen, but that's the thing, I've never seen the pilot. I've seen one episode, which is the Toy Man Christmas episode I've seen. Okay. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I like that episode quite a bit. But I haven't seen the pilot for that show. That's the only episode of Lois and Clark I've seen. So out of all those six live-action Superman-related shows, I've only seen three of the pilots. And so those would be – okay, so number – we're going worst to best, right?
Yeah, okay. Sure, yeah.
Three for me would be Krypton. Two for me would be Supergirl. And one for me would be Smallville.
Yeah, and again, that goes to your leanings of the type of show you
– Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, but so overall, it's a great start for Krypton. It's nice to have something Superman related. That is. How can I phrase this? That actually is more Superman because Supergirl is still Supergirl, and I don't want to lump it into being a Superman show. Because that would be a disservice to the character.
Sure, sure. It's still a Superman related show though. I mean, it deals with she fights a lot of Superman traditionally villains who are traditionally Superman villains. You've got Superman characters like Jimmy in it.
But it's nice to have a one that's more directly connected.
Sure.
To who Superman would be like that. Like a Superman weekly series, even though he's not in it.
Yeah.
It's nice to have one back on the air.
And Metropolis is coming too.
And you know what? And here's the thing. People that, and who knows, maybe you'll like Metropolis more because, I don't know. Hold on. Well, that's a whole nother ball of wax.
What were you saying?
Well, I was going to say you might like it more because, you know, it's got Lex.
I have a feeling. I'm pretty sure I will wind up liking Metropolis more than I like Krypton, if that's what you were
going. Well, I have another feeling about Krypton that they can tell me Superman's not in it, but that doesn't say nothing about Clark Kent. But that's another.
Well, you're talking about Metropolis?
Okay. Yeah, but it's nice to have a more Superman centric show. Than even Supergirl is on the air again.
You see, I don't know that I'd say it's more. I mean, Superman has actually appeared on Supergirl. So right, I don't know but that then I they came up with that show. Stupid.
Oh, she's stronger than me because it's her show and she has to be, and that excuse was BS. But I get it. It's her show. She has to have the.
Well, they also say she's stronger than Martian Manhunter, pretty much, which
I think is also stupid.
But I get it because it's her show. But I don't think there's – in terms of her being stronger than Superman, I don't think there's anything – I think I remember somebody telling me at some point that actually Kryptonian females are physically typically stronger than Kryptonian males. I think I remember hearing – when that episode came out, I think I remember
somebody saying that. I've personally never read that anywhere, so damned if I know. But anyway, it's having this weekly if you want to lump Supergirl in, having another weekly a dose of Superman mythology again,
sure,
is nice, and it satiates my thirst for Superman mythology while I'm waiting for Warner Brothers to announce another Henry Cavill Superman movie.
Well, you will be getting not a live action Superman movie, but you'll be getting a Superman movie later this year as well.
With
Death of Superman. Yeah,
but and one thing watching this Krypton pilot made me do is really want another Superman movie. So, Warner Brothers, make that announcement. We know what's happening. Let's go. Like, let's make that a reality. So, good start for Krypton. And I can't wait to see the twists and turns that come about because of this whole time travel aspect of it. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what's to come too.
And that about wraps it up for this week's episode. We had another long one for those who like long ones. But we had more news than we thought, actually.
Not quite as long as last episode, but...
Right. But we'll be back next week. Until that, have a wonderful weekend.
Hey, whoa!
Have a wonderful week ahead. What I forgot to mention was
that plugs.
Even though this was even though we are a Superman, this was a Superman centric episode of Krypton. We are part of the Batman Podcast Network.
Yes, I consider that a plug. Considering that a plug. Yes.
Hosted by Batman on Film, Bill Raimi, and the aforementioned Rick Shu.
And everybody
who
else.
Who is probably out there somewhere not reading comic books.
Oh, my goodness.
Rick, we're just kidding. We love you, buddy. and then social media plugs. If people want to talk more about Krypton with you, where can we do that?
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanB. I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, we'd love to hear from you in the form of an iTunes review. It would help us out a lot, and we'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Or even give us a few stars.
That too. Yes.
Preferably 4 or 5, something like that. And if you want to talk to me about Krypton, Smallville, Supergirl, Adventures of Superman, Lois and Clark, you can do that at Superhero Sci-Fi.
Can they talk to you about the Smallville episode Thirst?
No, you will be muted if you start talking about that episode. So just
you can talk to me about it, though.
Right, exactly. But until then, as I said before, have a wonderful week. And before that, a great weekend. We'll see you next time, folks.
Bye-bye.